Yorkshire
and the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
For the BBC News at 3 o'clock, this is Richard Lawson. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says the killing of the Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah has settled a score. He described his death in an Israeli airstrike on Beirut on Friday as a historic turning point. Well, Iran, a key ally of Hezbollah, has called for an emergency meeting at the UN Security Council. President Biden has repeated his call for a ceasefire. Our international editor, Jeremy Bowen, says the decisions taken over the next few days could determine whether the conflict spirals into a wider war, with Hezbollah damaged but not defeated.
It still has experienced fighters. It still has weapons. How the people who are there now after him decide to use those, what their allies in Iran decide to do, and the way Israel decides to try to follow up the success it's had so far, all that shorter term could lead to a wider Middle East war. Longer term, it could even reshape the region.
The MP for Canterbury, Rosie Duffield, has resigned from the Labour Party, accusing Sir Keir Starmer of sleaze and describing some of his policies as cruel. In her resignation letter, she criticises the Prime Minister for accepting tens of thousands of pounds worth of gifts from donors while cutting winter fuel payments to millions of pensioners. There's been no comment from Downing Street. The Conservatives are gathering in Birmingham for their annual conference. The four remaining contenders for the party leadership will each get a chance to make their pitch before Tory MPs decide which one will make it through to the final ballot. Kemi Badenoch has set out her position on immigration in an article for a Sunday newspaper. And from Birmingham, here's our reporter Joe Pike.
Writing in the Sunday Telegraph, Kemi Badenoch said it would be naive to assume that immigrants would automatically abandon what she called ancestral ethnic hostilities at the border, or that all cultures are equally valid. They are not, she said. In the same newspaper, Tom Tugendhat claimed his party lost the election due to a lack of vision and a failure of leadership. All the candidates will get to make their pitch during this conference. In the Sunday Express, Robert Jenrick said the party must not focus efforts on the South East, but win back the Red Wall, whilst James Cleverly has argued his party needs to end the Tory psychodrama.
In football, Chelsea's Cole Palmer has made Premier League history, becoming the first ever player to score 4 goals in the first half of a match. Chelsea's game against Brighton finished 4-2, with the 22-year-old disappointed that he didn't score more.
Yeah, I just try to play every game best as I can and hopefully pull off performances like that today. Should have had 5 or 6. We got a lot more chances and just took the...
And finally, a SpaceX rocket carrying just 2 crew members has taken off from Cape Canaveral in Florida to dock with the International Space Station. There are spare seats on board, so it can bring back 2 astronauts.
The Football Daily Podcast
on BBC Sounds.
I'm Joel Hart and I'm here at Liverpool's training ground interviewing the great Alison Becker.
I have 3 kids. They like to be on the goal when they play with me.
Do you see talent?
Yeah, I can see a little bit, but I would love to have a striker in the family.
Alison is up from the back and he goes, oh, would you believe it?
In this club, I think we have this prophetic sentence, you never walk alone. It's always a reminder for me. The people are on my side.
On the Football Daily Podcast, you can hear the full interview as we talk all things goalkeeping and what it takes to be the number one at one of the world's biggest clubs.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
On digital radio.
On BBC Sounds.
And ask your smart speaker to play BBC Radio 5 Live.
Lisa McCormick.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
We're going to cross live to South Korea shortly, where the capital, Seoul, a festival of football has drawn to a close. This is the Homeless World Cup, a tournament which aims to help homeless contestants improve their lives. Now, once again, Mexico took the men's trophy. They overcame England narrowly in the final yesterday. While Mexico's women were also triumphant, they claimed an unprecedented 9th title on the bounce. Here's more from Mickey Bristow.
Teams from 38 nations flew to Seoul to take part in the week-long competition, which was first held 2 decades ago. Football's world governing body, FIFA, sponsored the event for the first time this year and live-streamed matches. The aim of the tournament is to raise awareness about global homelessness. In the end, Mexico's women beat Romania and the men...
It's well stopped, but it's taken in!
...pipped England with a goal in the dying seconds.
Mexico will win!
So Mexico's men triumphed at the death, but what about the tournament as a whole? It's clear that the spirit of inclusivity shone through. Let's speak to Mel Young, who's the founder of the Homeless World Cup, and he's now live with us from South Korea. Hi, Mel. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I'm absolutely fine, thank you, and good to talk to you.
Yeah, I mean, how successful has this tournament been? Has South Korea really embraced it?
Yes, I think so. Homelessness manifests itself all over the world, and people love football. So when you're making an impact using the football, I think people kind of warm to it, and people of Seoul have been no different. The atmosphere on the finals day yesterday was fantastic, and there was some fantastic football on display. So, you know, every year we have this event, and people in different countries and different cities kind of really warm to us, and almost don't want us to go away.
How long have you been doing this for now, Mel?
So 2003 we started. The first one was held in Graz in Austria, and then we've been all over the world. I mean, cities bid to host it. We've been in Melbourne, we've been in Rio, Santiago, Amsterdam, Paris, Glasgow, and last year we were in Sacramento.
Wow, amazing. And what way does it work then? How is a team formed? What's the kind of criteria for a team?
Well, basically, first of all, people have to be homeless. There's not an international definition for homelessness, so it's the definition as per the country. And then we work with one partner per country, so we're structured a bit like an international sports federation. And that partner works all the year round with people on the street or in shelters or wherever the homeless people are, and simply gets them kicking a ball around. And we use football because it's very, very simple. Like anybody can kick a ball. Yeah. And some of our players are very, very good and some of our players are not very good. But it doesn't really matter because the beauty is you can just take a ball into the street and kick it. And that's the beginning of a process that our partners working with people all year round. Mm. And then a team selected to represent the country at the Homeless World Cup.
Brilliant. And how many countries do you have enter in the tournament?
We have our network of 70, and wow, we had 40 countries this year, some with two teams, men and women, and some with just men.
Yeah. Let's talk about this year's tournament and the teams and indeed the winners. Mexico's women, what are they doing right? They've won the trophy for the ninth time.
Yeah, they're very, very good. I think one of the ingredients here for both the teams is that our Mexican partner work with a lot of homeless people throughout the year. So they work with about 30,000 a year. So they have a big pool of people for starters. Mm-hmm. Just do the arithmetic. And then they have a very, very good coaching policy. Really, really interesting way they work with homeless people. Psychology is the key thing for them. It's about a mentality of changing people who are very, very low on confidence and self-esteem, bringing together as a team and creating a mentality in that team that they're going to win. And so that mentality kind of feeds off itself. It's a bit like, Real Madrid, how they win the Champions League.
Yeah.
And they just win it. And Mexico has a kind of similar element to what they do, but they're a fantastic outfit and they're very, very difficult to beat. And the women's tournament this year, I mean, Romania did well to get to the final, and they're a good team and they gave them the game, but Mexico were always going to win.
Next level, yeah. It was a little bit tighter in the men's final, but again, Mexico took it again.
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's the kind of about their mentality. I mean, I thought England were superb, actually, because they weren't coming in as one of the favourites. And one of the things that happened this year were some of the favourites were getting beaten. There was kind of shock results as the USA beat Portugal and so on and so forth. Wow. Which will be unusual in our competition. So England weren't coming in as favourites and they did really well, played some great football, deserved to get to the final, and then gave Mexico a really, really, really close game. It was inches. Mm. And unfortunately, Mexico, again, probably with that mentality that they know how to win, snatched it, I think, with 2 seconds to go. They scored the winner with 2 seconds to go. For England, disappointing, but actually a real lot to build on. They could be really, really proud of what they've done. And now, you know, the potential is to go on maybe next year and win it.
Yeah, definitely. What's the kind of audience like? Do you manage to fill the venues or...?
Yeah, yeah, we have a week long tournament. It's 8 days, and it's kind of, you know, starts kind of mid morning and goes on until around 5 or 6 o'clock. And so you get a kind of rolling crowd, and it's free, and people come along. And the crowds, if you start adding it up during the day, can really build up. So
yeah,
by the end there, all the stands were filled and the atmosphere was great. I mean, when you've got a game like the men's final with those number of goals flying in and the lead changing, I mean, it's just, you know, the atmosphere is just incredible. But we've had some very big numbers. When we held the event in Mexico City, actually, it was 167,000 people came to watch over the week.
Wow.
So they weren't all there at once, obviously, yeah, but, you know, so it's about 20,000 a day. So, you know, when we'd started, if we'd said that there was that number of people come to watch homeless people play football, you'd have gone, what are you kidding? But actually what happens here is that you've got two things going on. One, the format of the football we've created, which is four-a-side, with very, very fast-flowing games with leads changing hand all the time. So the sport itself is very compelling and people really want to watch it. And then you add in the dimension of the social change, which is what our purpose is about, changing people's lives. And then the whole ingredients come together into something that people seem to really like and will come out and watch it and support it.
That's amazing. So where's the next one being held?
We're in Oslo next year. Looking forward to that. You know, we're playing down in the by the waterfront area in the middle of Oslo. We've held it there before, and it was great. And no reason why it shouldn't be as great this time. And let's see who comes out champion. Who's cook? Everyone's talking about how they can beat the Mexicans now. How can we beat the Mexicans?
Yeah.
So that's the challenge for all the countries. And somebody will do it eventually because that's the way sport is. They will be beaten eventually.
Of course.
But we're all involved in it. But as I say, the critical thing for us is the purpose is about changing people's lives through football. And it works. And that's, if it's just about the event and big numbers and who was winning, I would say to people, come along and watch because you'll love it. It's just fantastic. Mm. But if that was what was all about, we wouldn't do it. It's about the purpose of changing people's lives through football, and that's what drives us.
And have you seen that sort of tangible example of it changing people's lives?
Yeah, absolutely, all the time. We are, you know, our player, our whole history is full of thousands of individual stories of people who've changed their lives as a result, Some of them now come back as trainers, coaches. Some even run the whole programs in their country with former homeless people. Then, you know, last night I was speaking to some of the referees who we've got now. We need referees, you know, to keep order like any sport. And, you know, some of them are former homeless players as well. And now they're coming as referees and they're fantastic people giving back. So huge numbers of stories of people who just transformed their lives through this. That's what motivates us.
Absolutely. Mel, just briefly before I do let you go, I mean, 21 years or so this tournament's been running. When you organised the first year, did you think it was going to develop in the way that it has?
Absolutely not. I mean, I guess when we came up with the idea to begin with, people said we were a bit crazy, you know, what, you're going to get people playing football and change their lives and so on. And so we were quite good at the dreaming bit, you know, and using our imagination. But we'd never, ever imagine we'd be at this point. Never, ever. It's just beyond wildest dreams, some of it. And it still keeps kind of giving. I mean, this year we've had a movie come out about, it's called The Beautiful Game, which I understand millions of people have watched in 187 wow. countries across the world, which is on Netflix. And people are saying it's the best football movie ever. And then we, you know, just recently signed a deal with FIFA. And so if you'd said that to me, people were making movies about this and the International Federation was signing deals with this, I'd have just said, you know, come on, that's beyond the wildest dreams. So, and even sitting talking to you today, talking to the media, and the media has been, is really interested in this and understands what we're about and is very supportive. So, I would have just said, I'd have shaken my head, you know, that wasn't really possible. So I'm still pinching myself.
Brilliant, brilliant. Mel, it's absolutely fantastic what you do. It really is. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us live from South Korea.
Yeah, Good talking to you. Thank you.
Cheers. Take care. Mel Young there, who is the founder of the Homeless World Cup, which has come to a conclusion with Mexico lifting both the men's and the women's trophy. It is 3:15 now. Good morning. Let me recap some of the things we're talking about on the programme today. We are talking about youth. What is your thing? What is your thing? What is it that you spend your time doing? And it might be a hobby or it might be something entirely different, but I want to know what your thing is. 0808 5909 693, or you can text me. The number is 85058. I'm also asking for your experiences of being a carer as well. What is your life like? Do you rely on support, or do you feel guilty when you have to sort of think about yourself and you have to rely on a little bit of extra support? Because you absolutely shouldn't. But this is something that Sir Michael Palin's been talking about this week. He says he regrets leaving his wife when she was alive while he went off to make his travel programmes. They were married for 57 years before she passed away in May 2023. So what's your life like if you're a carer? Share it with me. 0808 5909 693. And scams. Have you ever been scammed? Ever been the victim of a fraud? Or have you narrowly avoided it? Tell me what that is. Tell me where you were just a step ahead of the scammers. Or tell me a little bit about something that you have you've seen over the past few weeks, like a new scam maybe that we can educate other people about as well. 0808 5909 693 is the number, and you can text me 85058. We'll get some of the text very shortly. First though, let's speak to Zoe in Northampton. Hi, Zoe.
Hi, Lisa. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right. Are you all right?
I'm on the top of the world, looking down on creation, and the only explanation I can find is the love that I've found ever since you've been around. Your love put me at the top of the world.
Great tune, Zoe. I support that. So singing's your thing then?
It is, yeah.
Tell me more.
Well, when I was a kid, I remember like just wanting to sing. And when I was at school on a Thursday, there was a lot. So this is primary school. Okay. And I don't remember really being aware of how much I wanted to sing before this, but I was really brought home with this. The teacher used to say, who wants to sing? Put your hand, you know, people would put their hands up and you'd pick someone. Okay. So this one Thursday, I'm thinking, you know, getting the courage, I'm going to do this, I really want to sing, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm not paying attention. And I'm just seeing all the hands go up. So I go, oh, you know, so I put my hand up. And the teacher's picked me. And I said, yeah, me, I want to sing a solo. And the whole school just roared out laughter. And I was like, oh, my God.
No.
It was the first time I ever felt embarrassed. Because he had asked a question. He was looking for an answer. He hadn't got round to the singing bit.
Oh, goodness.
But you know what he did? He brought me up. He said, shall we let her sing? So they did let me sing that day. But, oh, my God, I was singing with a bright red face.
Oh, did that kind of stop you for a while, Zoe? Or were you not deterred?
Oh, God, no. No, that didn't stop me at all.
Yeah. So you still enjoy singing then?
Oh, I love it. Yeah. I'm not sure how the neighbours feel about it, but I'm sure they love it some of the time. But yeah, you know, I love singing.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to sing in the chamber choir when I was younger.
Oh, very good.
And I used to do a lot of performing. So I would get singing parts in the performing, you know, so I would have little bits where I wouldn't be the main character, but I would always have a singing part.
Yeah.
So they
recognised that it was something you were good at and you enjoyed.
Yeah. I mean, I know I'm not the best singer, but I was good enough and I had the confidence.
Yeah.
And confidence goes a long way, doesn't it?
To be fair, you're quite right. You look at half the people here in the charts, to be honest with you, Zoe, and I wouldn't say they're great singers, but they've got confidence. So,
yeah.
You know, it's half the battle.
I just think. And I think that if you can get over that and not think about other people singing. I mean, in the hotels where I used to live, I used to hear neighbours singing, and it used to be really refreshing. I'd be like, yes, you know, people are happy. Because you have to, when you're singing, you're happy.
Yeah.
You know? And even if you're sad, you're expressing it. So it's a way to happiness.
Yeah.
It's a measure to move to.
I think
it's a processing part.
I think that's a fair way. That's a fair way to put it. Definitely, definitely. I do sing, but you know what? I get like things stuck. You know the earworms. You know you get earworms.
And,
oh my goodness! Most of the time at the minute, it's some kind of kids song, and it just it absolutely drives me crazy. Zoe, absolutely drives me crazy.
Do you sing with your kids? Yeah, of course we do.
Yeah, love. And even the 18-month-old has started singing along, which is very cute. She can't talk, by the way. Can't even really kind of form that many words, but she's trying and it is very... She's got a good tune. I'll give her that. She's got a good tune, but the words just aren't quite there yet. But, you know, we'll work on that. But yeah, I just find myself singing along to silly songs and thinking, please put something else in my head, anything, I don't care what.
Oh, I know. I remember that when I was that age. And I used to feel uncomfortable singing kids' songs in public with them,
Let me tell you, worse than that, I was in the supermarket on my own the other day, so I wasn't even with the kids, and I found myself singing, "Yes, my name is Eagle Piggle." I'm like, "What am I doing? I'm singing in the night garden. What am I doing?"
It's easily done, though. It is so easily done.
I know. People must have thought I was absolutely, I'd lost it.
I was walking down the street the other day and I was singing, and I seen someone approaching and I thought, it doesn't matter if I'm singing. And they did look at me a little bit funny. And I thought, it doesn't matter, does it?
I'm enjoying
a little sing song. It's no bother to anyone.
Exactly. You're happy and that is what matters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. You do you. You're always welcome to sing.
Yeah. All right.
Good to speak to you, Zoe, as always. You take
care. And you, Lisa. Yeah. I'll catch up with you again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. You will. Take care, Zoe.
Yeah.
Zoe in Northampton there. Thank you for your call. 0808 599 693 is the number. You can text me 85058. I love that Carol's tweeted me. Hiya, Carol. I forget X exists. And then, like, once in a while, I sort of remember it exists for a few days. Carol says, could you just tell me what your mum texted you, because Mel talked over you. You see, Mel, you were talking over me. It wasn't very exciting, Carol, to be honest. She just said she wasn't going to be listening tonight because she's too tired. There you go. There's love for you. Kidding. I always tell her she does not need to listen, but there you go. She does. She loves listening to the crack and the banter. I won't phone in. 0808 599 693 is the number. Joe is in Nantwich. Joe, I do believe we've never spoken before. Is that right?
That's right, yep.
Oh,
good morning.
Lovely, good morning.
How are you? Just
begun. I'm good, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know I got a tune. This is lovely.
Yeah. We roll out the red carpet in this programme, Joe. How are you doing?
A bit romantic. You were getting a bit romantic with me, Lisa.
Think?
I don't know whether I'm that way inclined.
Apologies.
But who knows?
Apologies for that, Joe. It was not intentional at all. Are you well, anyway? You well?
I'm not too bad, thank you.
Good.
And I've only switched on just before 3.
Yeah.
So I missed the beginning, but I feel like I'm a killjoy because I phoned up because of Scam, and you've just been having a lovely chat with Zoe and having fun. So,
to be honest with you, Joe, you missed the best bit. I mean, we talked about sea monkeys. We talked about all sorts. I don't even know what happened, Joe. It just went down a weird road, okay?
Well, I'll have to catch up on BBC Sounds.
Do you know what? Don't bother.
All right. I don't think that's what you're supposed to say.
No, it's not. It's absolutely not. The boss would be listening going, what are you doing? But actually, I'm just saving you for yourself, to be honest.
Right. Bless you. Well, I was thinking, just before I go on to the Scam bit, I've got like a book that says Dance Like Nobody's Watching, because
absolutely.
I love dancing. If I was to talk about that, I'd miss that that's one of your topics. But I thought Zoe should think Sing Like Nobody's Listening.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. I'm all
what does it matter
that.
What other people think,
exactly,
as long as she's enjoying herself?
If you're happy, you do you. I'm all for that.
I think as we get older, we realise you do you.
You are right. And I've thought about this quite a lot. You hit that age and you start thinking that way and you think, goodness, I would never have done that. I never had the confidence to do that when I was younger.
And why didn't we? Why aren't we told that at school?
Exactly.
You know, why do they teach us about maths and algebra and not about having the confidence to sing like no one's listening.
Being assured of your singing and your dancing.
Exactly. Well, in America, you see, I think they teach that at school, in
do
schools.
They?
But,
yeah.
Well, they're far more confident, aren't they?
Well, I mean, that is true. That is very true. But there you go. Anyway, we're talking scams. I'm going down another
road. I
know. Did you hear you got scammed? Tell me your story.
I did, about 8 years ago, unfortunately. So, and I've never got the money back. So it's really, I've just phoned up because if it's a warning to anybody else. Yeah. So it was, in a nutshell, it was a guy that I met. I was internet dating, you know, 8 years ago, Match.com. A guy from Scotland. Seemed like the perfect match, which is apparently what they do. You know, they find, he'd obviously found out about me on LinkedIn or something, I think. So anyway, cutting to the chase, he ended up, it was like identity fraud, really, but because he was a web designer, or is, I presume still, a web designer and all into IT stuff, he knew exactly what to do to get my details, etc. And then I went to, I was living in, excuse me, in Altrincham at the time, so it was Trafford Police that I was speaking to. And then I said to, I think I said to Jack, one of your producer people, that it was, they got to the end of sort of talking to me and then said, well, because the guy's in Scotland, you should have been speaking to the Scottish police. And I went, you're joking, I've spent hours talking to you. You know, I need to start again with Scottish police, so I didn't bother. Because I was that fed up with the whole thing, so I've ended up paying the £8,500 that he stole off me.
Oh my goodness! So,
so it's a lot of money.
So, so where was that money? Where was it going? Was it in loans? Was
so,
it
so? No, no. Right. So it was all he'd either copied my credit card or I don't know how he'd done it. But again, you could see by my records because I was spending in Manchester. And then half an hour later, I was spending in Edinburgh or Glasgow or wherever. So I was saying, like, I can't be doing that. And they were going, well, you must have given him your, you know, your PIN details. And I said, well, no, I haven't.
No.
But I did date him. He could have been stood behind me and got that. Well, how's he got a chip and PIN? I said, well, I don't know. But he's created a card. You know, you tell me how he's doing it. And then they were saying, he can't be doing it. I'm like, well, he is doing it.
How long did you date him for?
Only about 3 months at the most.
Goodness, right, okay.
Because he was in Scotland, you see, and so it was. But he came down on the way to. Oh, and he's a semi-professional golfer.
Right.
I could tell you his name, which I did tell one of the producers' name, but I don't think I'm allowed probably to tell his name.
Let's not go down that road just in case.
Exactly. But he had a very unusual name, put it that way. So I don't even know whether that was true. So.
Goodness, really. So did you confront him about it?
No, because he deleted everything. So I didn't have his contact details. I didn't have his parents' contact details. I didn't have an address. I didn't have anything because he got into my phone records and deleted all of that, which they can do. It's more obvious now because we all do it, don't we? We update onto our computers. But I didn't, 8 years ago, I didn't know that that could be done. But he did. And again, the police were saying, no, we can't do that. Well, now the police wouldn't say that because everyone can do it.
And how long ago did you say that was?
About 8 years ago.
Right, okay, so in terms of online technology, I guess we understand.
Well, we're all more savvy, aren't we? But obviously, he was savvy because that was his business. He was self-employed. Well, he was part-time golf pro and part-time web designer.
And over what was the length of time that he was spending this money? I mean,
oh, not long,
really.
No, he did things like he paid off his parents' M&S credit card with my credit card. For about 4,300 or something.
My goodness.
So it's just like, but when you're trying to tell people and they think you've gone crackers because you've given somebody your details, I'm like, I have not given him my details. He's taken my details. But I didn't get a penny back. I went through my M&S credit card as well and tried, because that was what my credit card was. That's how I think he thought, oh, you've got a M&S credit card, I'll pay off this credit card as well with it. See what I mean? Because there's links where they won't really question what's going on, I suppose. Whereas now they question everything. That's the other thing. The security's gone way higher, isn't it? Two-step security, but 8 years ago it wasn't. But I was saying again to your producer, I don't know whether it's too late to go, you know, to go back and try and claim it back, because it is £8,500, and that's a lot of money to anybody, isn't it?
Of course it's a lot of money, and you know what might be worth it now that we do know a lot more about it. I don't know what they would say to you.
I don't know, because of the time, you know, sometimes they say after a certain length of time, but I'd have to start in with whatever it is. Is it 101 you dial for the Scottish?
Is it?
Scottish police? It's something like that. I can't remember exactly. Something like that, or 110 or something.
It is. Apparently it is.
101, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Lewis on the buttons is Scottish. He can verify.
Oh, OK. Well, maybe he can help me.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what? No, I'll run the name by him later. I'm really sorry to hear that happened to you, to be honest, Joe. Like, I mean...
Well, it's one of those things you live and learn, but I've never been internet dating since then. So, it's just like, you just don't know who's... Yeah. And I'm very savvy. You know, I've run my own business, so like one of your previous callers was saying, you know, you don't expect to be caught out.
No,
but he was very clever in what he did.
Yeah.
And I've also been scammed with share dealing, because I used to do a lot of share dealing, but I don't know whether it's classed as a scam particularly, but that was for a lot more money than that. So, I'm twice bitten, you know, three times shy sort of thing. So I pay for everything with cash now and just like don't do anything online.
Yeah.
Because I'm scared, you know. But now they're forcing us to, aren't they?
I know. I have this conversation with my mum frequently, actually.
Yeah.
My mum really doesn't want to do the whole online thing.
Well, my mum's the same.
Yeah, and I get careful. It. I totally get it.
My mum's 73 and my dad's, you know, in his 70s, so they don't want to, do they?
Yeah.
They're used to doing what they do.
Exactly, and I absolutely understand it, but it just seems like now we're all being... And especially with all the branches closing down as well, you kind of...
I know.
It's one of those situations.
I sound like an old woman, don't I?
So do
but
I.
I'm not actually
so
that old.
Nor am I, Joe, but, you know.
It's just like, the youth of today, you know. Oh, it's terrible, the world we live in.
In our day, Joe.
I'm hearing myself say everything I swore I would never say when I heard
that.
My mum say it years ago.
Oh, I know. I'm the very same. Every day I do something else and I think, there you go.
I'm turning into my mother.
Yeah, exactly. It happens to us all, Joe. It happens to us all.
Thank God. I've joined the club then, so thank you for the tune.
Oh, it's all good. Listen, thanks for giving us a call. And maybe try and report it. I don't know what they say about the time that's passed.
Do you know what? I'll have a go this week, and if I get any joy, I will phone back and I'll let you know.
Let me know. I'd love to hear more on that, all right? Let me know.
Fingers crossed.
Brilliant.
Fingers crossed for me.
Joe, I will do. You
take care.
See you later.
Bye.
Joe and Nantwich there with not quite a positive story. And you know, I really, really appreciate her sharing it with us. Maybe, you know, if somebody listening is in some sort of similar position, you might take a bit of comfort from Joe here and from Joe there and what she went through. Have you ever been scammed, or have you ever avoided a scam, narrowly avoided a scam because you spotted it at the last minute? Maybe you've come across one over the past few weeks or something that you'd like to share with other people, because actually they... it's good to sort of be in the loop of sort of the newer ones. So maybe we could do a bit of a public service broadcasting service today. So share it with me. 0808 509 693, or you can text me to 85058. It's 3:32.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
A new news headlines this morning. President Biden's again called for a ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah after the Iranian-backed group confirmed the death of Hassan Nasrallah in an airstrike. Speaking to reporters, Mr. Biden said the death of the Hezbollah leader was a measure of justice for his many victims, including hundreds of Americans during what he called a 40-year reign of terror. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has described the killing of Hassan Nasrallah as a historic turning point. Iran has declared a 5-day period of mourning. Tehran has also promised to avenge the death, stoking fears of an escalation in the region. In other news, the Kent MP Rosie Duffield has resigned from the Labour Party because of what she's called Sir Keir Starmer's cruel policies. In a resignation letter, she called the Prime Minister a hypocrite for accepting tens of thousands of pounds of gifts from donors while cutting winter fuel payments from most pensioners in England. She'll become the 14th independent MP to sit in the House of Commons. Downing Street hasn't yet commented. Millions of Americans are still without power and many face severe flooding from the powerful storm Helene. At least 53 people have been killed. And Oasis have been teasing an announcement expected on Monday. The band posted photos on social media of billboards of Noel and Liam Gallagher in several cities with the headline, "Be careful what you wish for." The brothers are embarking on a world tour next year and speculation is mounting about potential additional venues. Let's take a look at the sports news now. Here's John Wilkinson.
Liverpool topped the Premier League by a point from Manchester City and Arsenal. Arne Slot's side made it 5 wins out of 6 in the league with a 2-1 victory at Wolves. City were held to a 1-0 draw at Newcastle. Arsenal needed 2 stoppage time goals to beat Leicester 4-2. Cole Palmer scored 4 times in the first half of Chelsea's 4-2 win over Brighton. Everton got the first league win of their season, beating Crystal Palace. Brentford and West Ham drew 1-1. Fulham were 1-0 winners at Nottingham Forest. Amongst the Scottish Scottish Premiership games, Celtic are back on top of the table. The defending champions won 6-0 at St Johnstone to replace Aberdeen, who had earlier beat Dundee 2-1. Rugby Union's world champions South Africa have won their first rugby championship since 2019, beating Argentina by 48-7. In the Premiership, there were wins for Harlequins, Northampton Saints and Saracens, whilst Cardiff won at Scarlets and Ospreys beat Stormers amongst the United Rugby Championship games. Dame Sarah Storey has added to her collection of global titles with victory in the women's C5 road race in Zurich. She'd also won last weekend's C4-C5 individual time trial. It is the 10th time she's done the double at the Road and Paracycling World Championships. Lancashire have been relegated to Division 2 of Cricket's County Championship. Yorkshire have been promoted. Warrington Wolves are into Super League's playoff semi-finals after scoring a drop goal in Golden Point extra time to beat St Helens. And Terry Harper is the new WBO World Lightweight Champion. She's beaten fellow Englishwoman Rhiannon Dixon in Sheffield.
This is all smoke and mirrors. That's sales.
On BBC iPlayer.
What have you got to offer me?
Look, this is in all of our interests, right?
The new series of Industry.
I'm so glad you came.
Starring Kit Harington.
I'm an investment banker. Did you invite me here to watch you eat?
No, I invited you here to seduce you.
I've never met anyone with a bigger blind spot.
All's fair in love and war, right?
I needed my friend and you used me.
Industry.
Now, we go to work.
Starts Tuesday on BBC iPlayer.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK. Lisa McCormick.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
25 minutes away from 4. Good morning. I'm Lisa with you through until 5 here on 5 Live. We're taking your calls, of course. And also, we've been talking about scams this morning. So we'll hear more on that a little bit later on. As Moira Stewart, the veteran broadcaster, she's admitted that she was nearly conned out of thousands of pounds. But her bank spotted that it was a scam and she managed to swerve it. So I've been asking for your stories on that. More on that a little bit later on. 0808 5909 693. But I'm also asking as well, what is your thing? And this is why.
Good evening. Forget everything you think you know.
What?
Everyone is raving about Dungeons & Dragons. It's the kind of epic fun you've been waiting for.
Protect it with your very life.
I will.
Hold this. None of us can say our lives gone the way we'd hoped.
I did think you'd serve longer.
We got an early release.
Good behavior.
Yeah, behaving good.
It charms its way into your heart.
Oh, God, I could kiss you.
Try it.
Well, this year marks 50 years of Dungeons and Dragons, which has attracted a loyal and dedicated following over the past half century. Those of you who may indulge may have seen those who flocked to Dungeons and Dragons Honor Among Thieves when it was released last year. It starred Chris Pine. That was just a little bit of the trailer that we played there. But it's not just a hobby for male geeks, though. Hannah Rose is a co-founder of Horizons, which is a new female-led publication for players of tabletop role-playing. Now, it's the first monthly magazine dedicated to the hobby, and it launches next month. She's been telling me what's so great about the pastime.
Horizons is a digital-first magazine for tabletop games. There are 4 articles of game content, so that's stuff that people can just drop right into their games, can pull inspiration from, can use these mechanics. So these are creatures, locations, character options for tabletop games like Dungeons and Dragons. And 3 of these 4 articles in every issue are primarily aimed at fifth edition Dungeons and Dragons players. And then the 4th article in every issue is another featured tabletop role-playing game system. So for our first issue, we have Pathfinder, which is another very, you know, popular system with a 20-sided dice, similar to D&D. Yeah. And for our second issue, we have Candela Obscura, which is an investigative horror role-playing game created by the Critical Role folks.
See, I'm not going to lie. When you said there, we dedicate one to another game that isn't D&D, I was like, there are others? Because D&D just dominates the market, doesn't it?
Right. It's almost synonymous. For many people, it's almost synonymous with tabletop role-playing games.
Exactly, yeah. That, I'm not going to lie, that sounds like an awful lot of work, Hannah.
It is. It is. There's a reason it is a quarterly publication.
Yeah.
And there's about a 6 to 7 month lead time on making it. Because we not only are these articles written by wonderful authors and game designers we work with, but I go through several rounds of revisions with them, along with 2 rounds of playtesting. Mm-hmm. So we have paid playtesters who do this first round and actually use this material in games and then give us a bunch of super amazing, helpful feedback. And I go through that and take it back to the authors, do another round of revisions, and then we have some volunteer testers who are excited to use the content. And as there is no obligation for them, right? They are volunteers, but as their time and interest allows, they check it out and provide some more feedback. We do that all again.
Yeah.
We're also getting some gorgeous art during this time. We have a wonderful copy editor, and then it all goes into layout and gets the final polish and proofread. So
It's a big operation, Hannah. you talk about your article writers there, and I've just been having a little look there. You've got one that's a space plasma physicist. I mean, I don't know what that is, but it sounds amazing.
This is Imogen Gingell. She is a space plasma researcher at the University of Southampton. I actually got to meet her when I was over in the UK this summer for the first time. We met in person, but I've worked with her before, and she's a truly fantastic author and designer. And so I reached out to her to pitch some article concepts, and all of her concepts are always amazing and it's hard to choose, but one of the ones that she picked was this article called Draco X Asterisk that is all about star dragons.
Okay.
And so it has this, you know, lore about these star dragons and their life cycle and their role in the cosmos and stat blocks for stages of their life, from protostellar wormlings to sequence star dragons to the giant star worms that eventually die in what can be a very destructive supernova or something that creates and nurtures new life.
Wow, yeah. I guess, and that kind of thing really does lend itself to people working in that kind of field, doesn't it? Very much so the science audience, isn't it?
One of the wonderful things about the tabletop games industry and community is just so many people coming from so many different backgrounds and experiences and all having their different specialties and hobbies.
Yeah.
So my co-founder and I have some very different backgrounds and experiences. We overlap in some places, and we also bring a lot of different skills to the table and are really enjoying learning from each other along the way.
Yeah. How did you get involved in this, Hannah, initially?
I started back in 2017, I think. I had been playing tabletop games for a long time, or I've been playing tabletop games for a while, since late high school, but, you know, many people I know have been playing literally their whole lives, but I didn't come from a gaming family.
Yeah.
So I mostly grew up reading. But then I got involved in playing games, had a group I played with throughout university, and a friend of mine that I met online when I started getting into the online tabletop community is a professional opera singer. Kelly Butler, her handle is The Opera Geek. And she made a post about it'd be really cool to have a College of the Opera Bard. So Bard is one of the classes you can play in Dungeons and Dragons, and there are different specialties. She wanted to see one that's an opera specialty because that's her her trade. So I was like, all right, yeah, this sounds fun. She has some ideas of what this would look like. I'll write it up for her. I'll learn how to do this. And I sent her a message that I was doing this, and I think a really early version. And she was like, you need to actually publish this, you know, don't just like put up an image. Like, no, you should publish this and charge people for it. It's good. and there are a few ways you can publish that kind of content, but suffice to say, we re-released it in one. I taught myself how to do the layout and had a couple of people kind enough to try it out and released it on one. And there were a lot of factors that I guess made us very lucky to be in the right place at the right time and have a cool piece of content that people were excited about. Yeah. But we sold 500, this was December 23rd, and by Christmas morning we had sold 500 copies.
Wow.
which was, yeah, totally unexpected. So I got more into doing this and eventually decided that my day job as a software developer was not feeling as fulfilling and exciting, yeah, and that I was really excited about the potential of using both my, you know, scientific and mathematical interests and my literary and creative interests, yeah, together, and went freelance and have been doing game design and editing, and now more and more ever since.
That, to many people, that is an absolute dream job. I'm curious, Hannah, because I don't have a great deal of experience with tabletop gaming. I've got one of my very good friends from university is very, very, very big into Dungeons and Dragons, and you know, and he plays a lot, but with a lot of other men. Is it predominantly, would you say, men that are involved in the community? Are you in a minority?
Yes and no. There are a lot of women and non-men who have always been playing Dungeons and Dragons. Sometimes you'll get, you know, men who've been playing D&D since the 70s, yeah, who are like, well, I never played with any women back then. There weren't any women. And it's like, no, they were playing. They just didn't want to play with you.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of women in the hobby and the community and the, you know, professionals in one way or another. The industry has been getting more and more diverse, more and more authors of marginalized backgrounds, both in terms of race and gender and disability.
Yeah.
But there are not a lot of people who are non-men in stable full-time roles, because full-time roles are extremely rare in this tiny tabletop industry, right? Yeah. This is much smaller than video games.
Yeah.
So there are very few full-time positions, and most of those are held by people with more privilege who have been doing this for a long time, or for whom it is easier to be public figures in that way.
Sure.
And there are also, you know, lots of other fantastic women and non-binary people that I have been very inspired by with and lucky to work with. Mm-hmm. But at those highest levels, specifically within Dungeons and Dragons, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a whole community of, as we touched on, many, yeah, tabletop games,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, of course, D&D, of course,
is not the only one.
Yeah.
Though it is, in most places, the most well-known. But yeah, specifically within publishers of content for Dungeons & Dragons, I don't know of another one at the scope, at the scale we are looking at, that has any non-men in their leadership and ownership. So I didn't realize that when we first started planning this, and somewhere along the line, I was like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Are we as far as we know, the first? And I hope that will not be the case for long.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. I mean, clearly, you know, it is coming on leaps and bounds. I mean, you know, don't forget D&D has been around for like 50 years. But arguably,
in fact, this year is the 50th anniversary.
Is it? Is it actually?
Dragons, yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
goodness. And arguably, I mean, not even arguably, it's more popular than ever before. It's reaching a mass audience in a way that it never did. Why do you think that is? Mm-hmm. And do you think it'll just continue to go from strength to strength?
I think that, you know, in some ways this is a very easy answer, but I think that in this very digital world and in a world where people have sort of lives that are feeling increasingly complicated and scheduled and have all these different, right, devices and systems that are great tools and then also points of failure. There is something that's becoming even more and more desirable about the simplicity of sitting down and connecting with your friends and having a shared activity that brings you together week after week.
Yeah.
And tabletop games, I'd say especially games that are meant to be played in an extremely long format like Dungeons and Dragons, you can have a campaign that is played out over many, many sessions. And some people's campaigns go for years, go for 2 years, go for 3 years, you know, go for 14 years. Or, you know, a group might play several campaigns
of
over
course,
that
of
time.
Course, yeah.
But it's just, at its core, it's a game about sitting down around a table with your friends and telling stories and rolling dice together. And it's also translated quite well to a long distance virtual format. So I play with people who are in the UK and Australia and, you know, places in the EU and Canada and all over the world. It's also just an activity that you are experiencing things with your friends. You are telling these unique stories that nobody else is playing through. Nobody else's stories are like yours. Nobody else has your protagonist because those are your characters.
Of course,
And so you get all of these awesome in-jokes and references and shared experiences that are still shared experiences and shared in-character trauma that bring you together and create bonds.
Yeah, it's difficult to replicate that with anything else. Hannah, it's really good to talk to you in the programme. When are you launching Horizons? Is it next month?
The first issue comes out on October 9th.
Fantastic. Are you excited?
Yes, we're very excited to show it to people. We've been, you know, giving some content previews and teasers, and our website has some pieces, you know, one piece of art from each article and a little blurb about it.
Nice.
But there is so much in each of these. And one of the things I love about getting to do this, perhaps the most, is getting to hear how people use it in their games.
Yeah, of course.
Whether that is, you know, oh, I used these creatures and my players had an awesome time fighting them or befriending them, or okay, I'm going to remix this location and put it into my own campaign setting world that I made up.
Yeah.
Or I'm not really going to use this directly, but it gave me an idea for some other cool thing. Like, I love hearing about all of that.
Yeah. Oh, it's the feedback that makes it, isn't it? I wish you the best of luck with it. There's definitely a place for that, and I'm sure you'll be a massive success with it. So thank you for joining us to tell us about it.
Thank you for having me.
Hannah Rose there talking about how her love of Dungeons and Dragons has led to setting up that online publication, Horizons. It is 9 minutes away from 4 o'clock. Veteran broadcaster Maura Stewart's revealed that she nearly fell victim to a sophisticated bank scam. The 75-year-old presenter told The Times that she was only prevented from losing thousands of pounds due to the vigilance of a bank cashier. She said she got a call, which they claimed to be from her bank. The caller told her that someone had removed money from her account in collusion with staff at a local branch, so she had to go to another branch to try and resolve the problem. She then says the scammer stayed with her on the phone so that, in her words, he could tell me what to say to the bank staff at the new branch. He said, "We're going to send this amount of money from your account to see what happens if they intercept it." Well, that's when the cashier at the branch got involved. He took her to one side. He got the bank's anti-fraud team involved and confirmed that she was indeed being scammed. Maura says she was absolutely devastated. She was embarrassed and angry, adding, "If you're very independent as I am, it feels like you've let yourself down, your family and everybody who knows you," she says. "This feeling, the intrusion, it doesn't leave you." And that's very much what people have been echoing tonight, anyone that's been sharing their stories with me on the programme. Well, Ben Donaldson is the Managing Director for Economic Crime at UK Finance. They're the body that represent the financial services industry. So I asked him a little bit about what he thought about this push payment fraud.
I was really sorry to hear that Maura Stewart had been targeted in this way, because it's a terrible crime which causes psychological harm as well as financial loss, and obviously funds other types of organised crime as well. So I was sorry to hear that happened to her, but I was really pleased to hear that the bank had intervened and managed to help her resolve it in this case. So when people talk about push payment fraud, that is effectively the type of fraud where a criminal persuades you to make the payment yourself rather than trying to compromise your bank account sort of covertly. So it's that type of fraud where they've built a relationship with you, which could be to do with sort of online dating, or it could be to do with investments or a number of other things, and they try and persuade you to make the payment yourself.
Mm-hmm. I know when I go to transfer money or make any direct payments from my account, it always comes up with a little warning saying, "Are you sure you want to make this payment?" And quite often, if I'm in a rush, I get really annoyed by it. But is that sort of the little things that the banks practically can do to try and help people avoid this kind of thing?
Yeah, so warning consumers is a really important part of the approach that we take, but it's only one of the tactics that we use. So in Maura Stewart's case, because she went to the branch, she benefited from a tactic called the banking protocol, which is something that we at UK Finance coordinate, but it is a joint UK Finance banking industry and police initiative, where effectively we've trained banking staff to react to people in a very supportive and enabling way when they come into their branches, and to look out for that type of activity. And it's very successful. And what it means is that we can support the consumer and we can very quickly pass them on to law enforcement, because we've got a guaranteed very rapid police response, which protects a lot of people and leads to quite a large number of arrests.
And is that sort of standard across the banking industry, that staff have training to potentially spot these transactions?
That is, yeah. So we roll that training out nationally and across the country. We have that relationship with all of the different police forces to make sure that if people go into branches and a member of staff there, based on the training that we've given them, thinks that something might be amiss, then they will start asking them very discreet questions, and they will give them lots of support. And where necessary, they'll invoke the banking protocol, which means there'll be a very rapid police response, as I say.
Yeah. When Maura Stewart talked about this, she said that she felt embarrassed and angry with herself after nearly falling victim to this. I mean, is that a common response to this? And would it stop people coming forward, do you think?
It is so common, and it's so unfortunate. I think it's a natural sort of human reaction to this type of crime, but people really shouldn't feel embarrassed or ashamed when this sort of thing happens. Unfortunately, lots of people do. It actually happened to a close relative of mine, and they felt so embarrassed that they didn't tell me for 4 weeks. And, you know, I work in economic crime, and I would have thought that they would want to talk to me about it. But like Maura Stewart said in her article, they were very, very embarrassed and ashamed. So people shouldn't be. The criminals who do this, and I hate to pay them any kind of compliment, but they are sophisticated and they're persuasive. And it isn't anybody's fault apart from the criminal. You know, the victim is not at fault when this sort of thing happens. And people should come forward. I know it's easy for me to say that, but I would really encourage people to focus on the fact that it's not their fault, it's the criminal's fault. And if they think that this might be happening to them, the best thing to do is to contact your bank straight away.
I mean, fraud is the most common crime in the UK now, men. And these sorts of frauds, they're changing all the time. They're becoming more and more sophisticated. How can you, as an industry, keep on top of the sorts of methods that they're using?
So you're right. It's about 41% of all reported crime, and that's reported crime. So the actual number might be higher because, as we just said, not everybody reports it, unfortunately. It's a huge problem, the biggest criminal threat in the country. And it is, as I say, sophisticated. And you're absolutely right. It adapts all the time. The criminals change their tactics all the time. There are lots of things that we do to stay on top of it. So we have a very, very close relationship as the banking industry and through UK Finance with law enforcement, both regional police forces and City London Police, the Metropolitan Police and the National Crime Agency. And we work very, very closely with them on a number of different initiatives, some of which relate to making sure that we're identifying new criminal trends and we're able to put in countermeasures that try to protect customers as effectively as we can. But it is, unfortunately, always a bit of a battle, because, you know, we will plug one vulnerability and the criminals will do their utmost to find another. I would say that the thing that would be a game changer on that front would be greater collaboration with other sectors. The vast majority of these push payment frauds, as we call them, originate on social media. So a big focus should be on preventing this in the first place, because obviously when you get to the point where you're about to make a payment because somebody has asked you, the fraudster has asked you to, you've already been through quite a lot of communication and social engineering, which the criminal has used to try and persuade you to do it. So there are earlier intervention points on social media or through the telecoms network, which we'd like to see more kind of focus on.
And how much of a challenge is it that in a lot of cases, the perpetrators of these crimes are probably not in the UK?
That's right. So a lot of this criminal activity originates overseas, which is another challenge, particularly for law enforcement. Obviously, when they're trying to bring people to justice, it adds many layers of complexity for them. And it causes all sorts of different challenges for us as well. But that's one of the reasons why all sectors and law enforcement kind of working together as a team is so important, because we'll all have different parts of the jigsaw. Bringing it all together is the key to this, which is why we're so keen to do as much work as we can sort of with other industries as well.
Absolutely. In terms of if somebody was listening and they did become a victim, you know, God forbid that would happen to one of our listeners, what sort of what's covered in terms of like what they can get back from the bank?
So the rules are about to change. So there will be reimbursement for all victims of this type of fraud from the 7th of October onwards, which is a change in the regulations. What I would say is that although that rule is changing, it's still really, really important that everybody takes steps to protect themselves from this happening in the first place, because as we said earlier, you know, this is as much about psychological harm and organized crime groups using the profits from this type of crime to commit other crimes as it is the financial loss. And the other thing I think with reimbursement is that I think, as came out in Maurice Stewart's account, it doesn't really solve the problem. It solves part of it. You know, reimbursing a victim is obviously a good thing to do, but they are still going to have those feelings of guilt. Some people feel devastated in other ways. You know, I think romance scams are a particularly cruel type of fraud, because people at the end of that journey are left sort of heartbroken as well as having lost their money. And the money being reimbursed is a good thing, but it doesn't undo the other harm that it's caused to their mental health, unfortunately.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
For the BBC News at 4 o'clock, this is Richard Lawson. President Biden has reiterated his calls for a ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah after the Iranian-backed group confirmed the death of Hassan Nasrallah in an airstrike. Speaking to reporters, Mr. Biden said the death of Hezbollah's leader was a measure of justice for his many victims, including hundreds of Americans during what he called a 40-year reign of terror. Well, from Washington, here's our correspondent, Jenny Kumar.
President Biden's comments reiterate his consistent message since the Gaza conflict began, that the US stands by Israel whilst also emphasising the need for a diplomatic solution. Mr. Biden said that the killing of Hassan Nasrallah was in response to Hezbollah's leader's decision to open up a northern front after the Hamas attack on October the 7th. Although there's a sense of growing tension in the White House over Israel's defiance, Mr. Biden stopped short of any criticism.
The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has described the killing of Hassan Nasrallah as a historic turning point and necessary to achieve Israel's war goals. Iran has declared a five-day period of mourning. Tehran also promised to avenge the death, stoking fears of escalation in the region. The Kent MP Rosie Duffield has resigned from the Labour Party because of what she called Sir Keir Starmer's cruel policies. In her resignation letter, she called the Prime Minister a hypocrite for accepting tens of thousands of pounds from donors while cutting winter fuel payments to most pensioners in England. She'll become the 14th independent MP sitting in the House of Commons. And Ms. Duffield told the BBC's Laura Kunzberg she was profoundly disappointed by Sir Keir.
We all had our faith in Keir Starmer and a Labour government, and I feel that voters and activists and MPs are being completely laughed at and completely taken for granted.
And Downing Street is yet to comment. Austria is voting in a general election today, which the far-right Freedom Party could win for the first time. It's narrowly ahead in the ruling Conservatives in the opinion polls, with the opposition Social Democrats